Knives, machetes, saws, and shears. Multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Up there, Jack with Pepsi.
I'm there for the pack out. You just got to pack me in.
Committed to the bow early on. Like, I love getting close and putting up.
You cover a range of stuff on here too, right? Like,
we call this the THP World Headquarters.
You know, my grandpa Roy Weatherby.
I came into like that golden little pocket where there was like four or five different bowls. Just
you're Canadian. We're doing a Canadian podcast.
My name's Douglas Bode.
I'm Robbie Denning.
Roy Gandy.
Oh, it was good. I only had two shithead drivers, and that was it. That pulled some pretty stupid stuff. But
you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just having some issues with my computer connecting to my web camera here.
I don't know. This is the best you've looked since you came on the show.
Yeah. Just a landscape.
Hey, fellas, here's a BC elk that I got it for years ago.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a nice one.
That's a musk elk by a Fort St. John.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Gary was a 50-year outfitter up there. He said that's the biggest elk that's ever came out of his area.
No shit. Yeah, that's a big elk up there.
It was only 357, but 357 bull at in the Prophet Musco is like unheard of. Packed him out one way.
Wow.
On my back.
I'm just seeing if I could do an avatar for Derek.
I'll just switch it over. It's having issues with it.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. It's kind of annoying.
Just give him a princess avatar.
are you recording for the show right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I won't show you something inappropriate then.
Oh, no, go ahead. I don't have to cut it in yet.
Okay,
The meetings, they just start recording automatically as soon as somebody signs in. So,
okay, well, don't be offended by this. But this is a picture of me and my mom when I was a baby.
One morning, I don't know, a month or two ago, Kevin, I think it was first thing in the freaking morning, and he's like, dudes, I got into a huge accident, and he's like, really messed up my thumb and all this kind of stuff, and
I broke my thumb,
and yeah, sends us a picture, his freaking cock on a hand type of
thing. I'll send it to you so you can see it. It's fucking hilarious. My brother sent it to me, and I was like, oh, I gotta get the guys with this. Fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
So how's the flight home, Derek?
It was good. Got home and snow was all gone.
Oh yeah.
It was really good. Just leaving early like that, right?
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, no, it was nice. The only negative side is I couldn't hit all the bow shops on the way home because they're all closed on Sundays.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so I had big plans that were immediately stopped when I pulled in the parking lot. And there's nobody there. I'm like, shit.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got the guys with that one. Muck. I was like, oh, fuck. I fucked up my hand. Check it out.
And here we are actually legitimately concerned for him, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Because like literally at work, everybody's like getting their hand in pinch points and guys getting their hands crushed and stuff like in the States. And I'm like, holy shit, what happened, man? It's like, what the hell?
Oh my God.
Fuck you, Kev.
I like the guys, like they're like,
Yeah,
they get right in. Like, are you trying to put that in your fucking mouth, you weirdo?
Hey, look at this fucking whitetail that my dad shot back in the 80s. I have in my house.
Oh my god!
Wow,
that's shot that's just nice. South of Weyburn.
Really?
That's insane.
He makes the book both ways, wow. The typical and non-typical, because he's a big 5x6.
I remember.
You forgot this at the house. I don't know if you want it for. I'll hold on to it for you.
Yeah. No, I actually lost it. I was looking for it. But
yeah, it was when I was cleaning up the bunk. It was underneath the bunk.
It must have just fell down there.
Hunter was running around the house.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, Muck, I saw the biggest when I had a farm out in Saskatchewan. It was pre-hunting times for me. But yeah, the biggest whitetail I'd ever seen in my life was on there too. Came home from work and just a giant 6x6. But it was like the tine links just went forever and huge mass and yeah, it was something else.
I've only seen one Boone and Crockett on the hoof, and I had killed a 5x5 like 30 minutes before. We drove the truck to it, packed it out, went back to the road. We went around this old big, you know, down south, there's these big pig barns, and there was this big deer and a doe by a windrow. And we legitimately watched it for 30 minutes. Like it was just standing by this windrow, wasn't scared. So I looked it over with the binos for 30 minutes. And I'm like, that's a buck deer. I know for like in my heart, I know that's a buck deer. So my buddy gets out and there's no real stuff in between us. So we sneak to this old abandoned farmyard where there's a couple old dilapidated buildings. And I'm like telling him to calm down. You know, it's probably a 300 yard shot, but it's very doable. And, I don't know why he must have got buck fever so bad. Instead of like leaning on the edge of the old barn or whatever we were leaning on, he decides he's gonna go right out at the open and take a knee. Well, puts the deer on alert and he shoots. And I'm looking through the binos and I could see above him he hit the trees because there's kind of some snow in the trees and the deer runs away and we lose it. Well, next the big buck night for that area. A kid shot it a day later, about a mile from where we saw it, and it was like a 172 typical. Wow. Yeah, like that's the only time I've ever seen a typical, like a Booner on the hoof. It was that time, but I've got some 160s, but never 170s.
Oh, that's something else.
That's a big deer. You think of those ones. So, like, we were watching those over 200s that Josh Bomar was shooting that morning. You're here, Pete? Like,
yeah.
Fuck those deer. Just like that one, what I don't remember what it scored, but this deer looked like a freak. Like it was so big watching it. Like
it just looked fake. Like yeah, you picture what you have around where you are. And then, well, you got bigger deer than us for the most part on average, but you look at it and you're like, there's no way that can be real. Like no way. You don't actually picture somebody says a 200 inch whitetail. You know, I can picture a 200 inch mule deer, but not a whitetail. And when you see it, you're just crazy. Like, I don't think I'd hit that either. I think I'd have buck fever like crazy.
Yeah. How far from you, Muck, was that Hansen buck shot?
Up by Saskatoon, bigger. So from me,
bigger.
4 hours. But it's, okay. Yeah, he's bigger Saskatchewan.
Is that place known for big deer? Or is it just that one? That one.
Well, it's more of a like mule deer area, I believe. Oh, but okay. Yeah, it's just a freak.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I don't really know that area.
I love those stories. Once there's a big deer shot, then everyone flocks to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that big deer was already shot. Why are you guys going there? Like
that's like
every deer there is that big. Come on.
That's like I talked to the guy that got the Pope and Young world record. He shot it. Kind of, I had hunted in the area where he had shot it, and he had said he almost wished that he didn't shoot that elk in that area because now he's seeing everybody out there. It's just crazy. People figure out, right? And now he said it's like, well, I didn't know what was walking in the bush to me, shot this thing, and now his area is absolutely shit now because everybody's in there.
Yeah, but those things are freaks. Like when those big animals go through there, they're just like that's the one that has been avoiding everybody for so long. And it's
I think it was like after deductions it was like 421 or something like that.
Fuck, you know, that's one of the things I hate about hunting. Hunting's my whole life, but that's exactly what I hate about it. Like, you just, like, what do you think? You're going to get the twin to that or something like that? Like, why would you?
Yeah, I know.
God, I hate that. Flood that area and then just totally decimate whatever's there.
Yeah, and it is decimated. Like, the elk that are in there are, like, you need horses to get to them now. It's crazy. It's just inaccessible. So now, like, what was really a good vast outback area is now just crawling with people. It's good for my area because it gets them out of there, like the other area I hunt across, but it's just not good for the elk. Like, it's just not good for them in general, like, because like, in general, the people that are going in there now, it's just like, there isn't enough elk. There's only 420 elk in that whole zone. You know, like, that, it's exactly that. It was a complete freak just by chance. Like, he'd only been shooting a couple decent sixes in there, but nothing like that. And then this guy walks out, shoots it, and now it's on the map. Everybody's in there.
Yeah, there's not, like, I mean, well, yeah, I don't know. It's crazy. Some areas, though, like I was telling you, Derek, that place down around the Soyuz, it's just like there's always big elk down there. But,
I got to be on two hunts in the White Mountain in Arizona. Talk about fucking big elk.
Yeah, down there.
Holy shit.
Down, yeah. In those, the desert, it's funny, like, in those desert, like, those desert areas, that's the same with, like, down around the Soyuz area where those, every year, second year, there's a big bull get taken out of there, and it's really dry.
Yep.
Yeah.
They're busted up, though. Like, almost every elk you see down there is busted up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, Derek, everybody's been raving about your presentation, the dinner.
Thanks, man. Yeah. That's good to hear. Put a lot of work into that.
I went down to, Chuck had, he had a fall a little while ago, you know, Chuck from Hardcore Pete, the guy who makes the strings, and
yeah,
he's been having some head issues, so he hasn't been at work, but I think he was back at work today, so hopefully he can get your strings made.
Oh, that'd be good. I wanted to go shoot my bow the other day, and I was like, fuck.
Oh, fuck. Speaking of which, there's your peep right there that I meant to send you. God damn it.
Oh, it's all good.
I got a hunting one right there for you, and then the pro model.
Very cool. Thank you.
But anyway, yeah. So when I was in Hardcore, I was down there. I went down to help get some bows out the door because the bows were lining up. And everybody that came in said, you did a bang up job. So they first said you guys. So obviously, naturally, I took all the credit.
Yeah.
Derek, who is it? I don't know who else is there.
Yeah,
a couple of guys follow me around, but that's about it.
Yeah, they weren't even invited. No, just kidding. Nope. Good job. So, Muck, bear season, buddy.
Yep, my second best time of the year. Elk is my first, and then bear is my second.
No doubt. Yeah, it's amazing how fast time fucking flies by. Well, we had you on, I guess not that long ago, because we had you on when we were talking about calling elk in BC.
It's still been a good 6 months, though.
Yep. It was before, I think it was August of last year.
Yeah, before we were all taken off.
That's right.
Yeah.
How did your elk guide season go? Good?
Well, I don't guide anymore. Call me and I just go with them. But no, I guided I called in a big 5x5 for a guy here, and then I spent the rest of the time looking for a moose for myself because I got drawn for moose. So I only got on one elk hunt.
Killer moose too, by the
way. Oh, crank, you know, I stuck him with my bow too, but I had to finish him with my muzzleloader because he came to like 30 yards and then he saw me and my nephew was videoing it and he kind of trotted, and I don't know, my nephew was calling to him, but he didn't stop. So he kind of picked up and I drew back, and it was only, like I said, 30 yards, hit him back kind of just behind the belly, kind of the pelvis area. And, it looked, I mean, it was a great hunt, but it looked awful because I had one of those strobing strobing Knox, and he ran and he went across the field and he went into a posted like big signs, no hunting. And thank God I'm from that area, because I started calling people and took me almost 2 hours to find the landowner. And then when I finally did, he's like, nope, that's why the signs are there. And I said, come on, man. Like, I got an arrow in this bull and it looks awful because it's sitting there strobing away on him. And he's like, okay, go in there, but you have to shoot him and then just drag him out of there. So ended up just going in there with the muzzle loader and finishing him off. But it was great.
So did you tell the guy says he said no?
Yeah, he said no.
Did you tell him you already shot this thing?
Yeah.
He still said no?
Well, yeah. So I told him I'd shot it on the farmer Johnners on the, you know, to the south of him, and it went and ran into his area, and he said no. But then that's what I'm like, come on, man. Like, I got an arrow in him and it looks awful because it's like sitting there strobing and I feel bad for him. So then he changed his mind. But thank God that the guy that I was staying with, like, so I just pulled a capper down to an old farmer friend down there where I got drawn, and I called him up as the last draw. I'm like, hey, do you know so-and-so? And he's like, yeah, actually, he's a good buddy of mine. So he gave me his number, and I kind of like, I'm like, I'm staying with Paul. But that's how I got it. But yeah, he's a cranker. He's best. I don't need to necessarily hunt another moose after that. That was all I ever wanted.
Yeah, that thing was huge.
He was just shy of 50, but Paul made it on the one side, and he had 12 or 15 points on one side and 9 or 10 on the other. So he was like, he's basically as good a bull as have I ever guided when I was in BC. So
yeah. No, he was a beauty.
It was something to strive for.
Yeah. And you know, it took me 30 years to get that tag, like legitimately 30 years. Wow. Because it's in a really low, like there's only 15 tags allowed in that zone. And of course, the way our system works here, it takes you 15 years to get eligible to draw in that zone. So
That's a long time.
I know. So like now I just like what I consider the big six in Saskatchewan: elk, moose, whitetail, mule deer, antelope, black bear. Those are what we consider the big six. So I just need a good 6-point elk, and then I've got them all.
No, is a draw for elk out there, right?
Yes. Well, there is open zones, but good luck getting anything above a spike or a forkhorn.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Just get shot.
Oh, just literally with a heartbeat, it gets shot.
Yeah.
So the good zones where you're going to get a nice big 6x6 is draw only. So next year, this year I probably won't get drawn again, but next year I'll be in what we call legacy pool. I will get drawn next year, so it'll either be this year or next year I'll get my 6x6. I've never shot an elk, so I don't this will be my first elk ever, and it'll probably be my last, because the next time I get drawn I'll be damn near 80 years old. So
fuck, that's crazy, man.
I know, it sucks.
It's so bizarre. And like in BC we have the lottery draw, so I mean you could put in forever and never get it, and your neighbor could get it 12 times.
Yeah. Well, I've never in my, like, I'm 53, I've never drew an antelope tag in Saskatchewan. My son, when he was 14, drew one. That's how lucky he was. Yeah,
is that lottery?
Well, kind of. It's the same thing. Like they only do 600 tags and 10,000 people apply. So you're very, so very
based off points or anything like that, just random draw.
Well, we do have the seniority pool, but the problem is Saskatchewan, for whatever reason, closed antelope hunting like 8 years ago, and then that reset everybody's points, or not points, but your status.
So everyone's in the same pool now.
Everybody's in the same pool. So they kept saying, oh, everybody will get drawn out of legacy. Problem is there's 10,000 people moving into legacy at the same time I am. Yeah. So if you do get drawn, you'll never get drawn in your life again, because it takes 15 years just to get back to the pool to get drawn. Because the way it works here is if you get drawn, like I got drawn for moose, I go down to D pool and I have to go D, C, B, A, and then I have to go Super A 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 before I can eligible to draw again.
And it's it's increasing. That's something that we're seeing too, is the point creep. Like there's one zone that it produces big elk, like 380 class bulls, and I apply for it, and you know, it was 12, it's 15. Every year it's increasing. It's one of those zones where like you'd get an airplane and fly it. It's your best chance in Alberta to get a 360, 380 class bull. But yeah, it's just it's the new craze, right? The fad, that zone, everybody keeps applying. And I apply, I get 12 years, it's 13, 14, 15. It keeps going. And I think it's at 15 now. Same thing with moose in the southern zones. Moose is like at like 20 years now.
Wow.
So it's like, it's not like for a couple of my uncles and stuff, it's like, yeah, this will be it. This is it. One more chance.
In here too, it's the same with because my moose was a prairie moose too. But the critics will say, oh, you can go to the zones where it's open, but good luck ever getting anything. Like that's the thing. You go to those open zones, good luck.
Yeah.
You know, if you do, you get something like if you're literally a meat hunter, fine. But I'm pretty much a trophy hunter.
Yeah, for something that's a good representation of the species that's mature. You're like you say, you're not, especially with moose, that's lower concentration in general. You're not going to see that age class. Yeah, you're right.
Crazy. Anyways, bear season.
Yep.
Stoked. Pretty pumped to come out there.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. The last 2 years we've had snow right to the end of April, and I haven't got my baits until the first week of May. And I'm thinking my next day's off, I might have to run up there and at least throw a couple barrels. I'm trying to find some beavers and stuff like that. But yeah, I'm thinking.
My brother texted me, said he's got some beavers for you.
Oh, yeah, but in BC or where?
Alberta.
Alberta.
Yeah, well, that doesn't do me any good.
Oh.
Unless you're coming down, tell them to freeze them.
Yeah, they are frozen.
Yeah, tell them to.
I can pick them up when I'm going through.
Yeah, absolutely, grab them for sure. Then, I mean, we haven't really got together and cemented a time down, but I'm thinking that second. Well,
whenever you just call me and say, hey, giddy up, we're going. I'm going, so I'm good to go.
Yeah,
and I'll hop in the rig and head down there.
Sounds good. I'm thinking second week of May is probably going to be the best, because that's some of the prime movement.
You're the man.
I've already heard they're already out up here. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, guys have been, here it's, I don't know. It snowed, but then it snowed up high again. So
yeah,
we'll see. But I don't think they're going too far from their den around here. So normally when you get snow come, like the snow line is just coming and going, because you look at the hills and all of a sudden it'd be the snow line's creeping up the mountain, and then it gets cold again and we get some moisture, and then it moves itself way down. So I don't think though in that case they're going too far from their den.
Yeah, we still had like -3 or -4 last night, and yeah, the snow line's coming down quite a ways. Which is, I won't complain about that for now. I'd like the water and all that kind of stuff for later on, but
yeah,
definitely nice to see the animals coming out a little
here,
more.
Here we're on the about a week straight about +15 weather now. So, whatever we had snow, it's completely gone.
Yeah, wow, that's crazy. So as soon as the snow melts, you're throwing bait out.
Yeah, like well, there's in Manitoba where we're going, just on the edge of Saskatchewan, you can only bait 15 days before the season. Season opens the 22nd of April, so it's no reason to do that. Like,
yeah, I
get the season's so long and there's so many bears that I'll probably put them around the 17th, 18th. I'll probably go and fill them up, and then once a week from there on. So, and it really, like last year, it took all of 30 minutes for a bear to hit the bait after I'm gone. Like those bears are so used to me now. I'm the only one that hunts there. They're waiting for me to set those baits up. So
yeah. Yeah. That's what kind of talk. Go ahead, B.
I was going to say, what kind of targets do you have this year? Any specifics?
Like target bears?
Yeah.
Well, this is the only one. Come back this, around. This is the only one I'm not letting Kevin kill.
I kind of figured you were keeping that one.
He's a giant brown. Like he
is
almost
that the one. Is that the one last year from last year?
Vico. So this picture was taken the night after or the day after I shot mine with the recurve. So I went and reset the baits the next day after I shot mine with the recurve. Oh, look who shows up, Vico.
Nice. Well, I mean, this year, because last year was it you shot War Pig?
Yeah, was no, two years ago.
2 years ago, and then last year.
Last year I shot a 300 pounder with my recurve.
Right.
Gotcha. So 3 years ago I shot a 19.5-inch black with my bow. And then and then 2 years ago was War Pig, and then last year was a one with my recurve off the ground.
Gotcha. And then last year you were telling us about this big brown one. That's him, yeah. Okay,
yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah. Well, it's gonna be pretty cool, man. I'm excited to see this whole baiting thing. It's interesting for bears. I mean, like I bait for whitetail. So,
it's really no different. Like the baiting structure is different, but it's really no different. Like once you have an established bait and the animals know that it's there, bears are even more predictable than whitetail. Even like they literally come around and the rut for bears generally starts mid May to right into mid June. And soon, like it really fires up towards the end of May. And if you can have the patience to hold out, generally the big guys come around in that first 2 weeks of June. I don't know where they come from, but they show up. So really first, as soon as you set your baits, you get about 3 weeks of just absolutely insane action where you see like 15 bears a night. And then it gets what they call the dandelion lull when things start to green up and then the bears sort of take off. And then if long as you can bring in the sows, you'll bring in those big bears. Like that picture there, it was like June 4th or 5th. And they're in full rut. So I think this bears only shows up in June. So I've got to hold off now because problem is I get always so good bears. I can never hold off.
Yeah. So how many bears? So we're going to be hunting in Manitoba.
Yeah. Just like I was telling Pete, like where we're hunting is like 6 miles into Manitoba from Saskatchewan because there's a big, provincial park or forest that Saskatchewan, Manitoba shares. It's called the Duck Mountains. And basically the borders between the both provinces run right through the middle. And there's this big hunting show in Yorkton called the Parkland Outdoor Show and Expo. And I always was doing like elk seminars and elk presentations. And I met this couple from on the Manitoba side. And they told me they lived right on the edge of the forest fringe and they actually have deeded land into the forest fringe. And they said, we got incredible bear. And I never really took them serious. I just kind of thought they were bullshitting me. And a couple of years went by and I called them one day, just kind of a cold call, say, hey, were you guys serious? And they said, yeah. So I took them up on it. I killed a really good bear. I got that 3/4 mount here that year and it became more of a friendship. They're almost like family to me now. Mm-hmm. But the crazy thing is I killed War Pig, like, I don't know, 1,000 yards from their house and they never seen that bear ever.
Wow.
Yeah. That's insane. Like I wondered like those bears, I mean, how far are they coming from? And like, it's such a small, like they gotta be around somewhere. It's gotta be just polluted with bears out there.
Well, Saskatchewan's notorious for big whitetail, but if you check the record books, Manitoba is always there for black bear. And the area that we're going to hunt is where all those bears come from. And it just so happens that I made best friends with them. And then another farmer where we're going to hunt is this other guy where I have this old ghetto camper that we're going to stay in. We're going to hunt his stuff because those are the two most active baits that we have. So,
yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm disappointed I'm not able to make it out this year. appreciate the invite, but damn. Yeah, it is what it is.
I mean, I mean, I know that you're going to have a good time, and I'm not like it. The thing is bear hunting. It's one of the greatest ways to get somebody into hunting because bears are, they're not as well, the big ones are, but they're not as wary as whitetail, and you're up in the tree and usually there's lots of them. And most people on their first bear aren't overly picky. And so I always like, you know, the deal I got with this farmer is they have, the bears are way more destructive to the fields than any animal that they like, elk or moose that they have there. One black bear will destroy so much canola. And so the way I got on hunting with this farmer was that, cause he had lots of people asking to hunt his land, was that I brought my friends and stuff like that because they wanted to bring down the numbers. We can only harvest one bear there. So he's like, yeah, bring your friends, you know, bring your families and stuff like that. So the kind of the deal is that he wants three or four bears taken out of there, at least three or four. And that doesn't hurt the population at all. And I'm a trophy hunter. So what I do is we always try to take people out, you know, for their first bear, and they're not overly picky and they'll take a 200-300 bear. And like when you come down there, Kev, we're going to try to get a big one, but you can take whatever bear you want, but just we are
just not the brown one.
Just not the brown one.
Oh shit. I missed. I hit that one behind it.
I didn't see it at all.
And you never know if the excitement might get the best of us if Vico comes in, but you know, I know he won't because I've never had him on camera until into June.
Well, you're going to have your setup there too. So
yeah, but I'm
have your bow too.
My nephew Landon is the other guy that helps me. And we kind of made a pact this year that we're not going to shoot any blacks. Like I've killed five black bear, like black colored bears in a row. And I mean, I've got skulls all over my basement and I've got all these black bears I don't have anything to do with. So really,
I meant though, like, so you're going to have your setup. So if that bear you want to shoot comes in, you'll be able to drill it.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, for sure. Are you going recurve?
Well, I bought a recurve this year, a new one. Yes. My plan is, but we'll see.
Yeah. No, I don't know. It's going to be awesome. I'm pumped.
Yeah, it'll be good. I mean, the bear action you're going to see is just world class. Like the one we had a young guy come last year and we had 15 bears in one night.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like here in BC, like we'll see. So like if you, some days we'll go out and you could spot five bears, but it's different, right? It's like optics. You might catch them crossing, you know, running across the road when you're driving down a forestry service road or something. Most of them are you're glassing though, right? Like it's all spot and stock. So
yeah, I've always wanted to hunt the island there for black bear.
Vancouver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of my bucket list.
Wardo was there last year and they ended up getting, I think they got one. They got it with a rifle. I think Nolan got one with a rifle, but yeah, really fun and really cool. So like I've hunted same thing, like along the coast, a little different, but more the north coast, but we hunted a lot of coastal bears along the ocean and stuff. So, but they're bigger than the bears down here, but like I really wasn't into bear hunting when I lived up there. It's kind of a shame. Like we just never did it. Just like waited for moose and we hunt a lot of blacktail. So
black bear is kind of one of those animals that either you hunt it or you don't.
Yeah.
And like, the farmers around there, they all think I'm crazy for baiting them and hunting these bears. Cause they can't stand them. Mind you, they are very destructive. Like I've seen the damage in canola fields and stuff. And it's incredible. I've never held out till the fall to hunt there. But in the fall, they say that there'll be 20, 30 of them in the fields and just you know, because they're basically grain fed.
Yeah. So, like, I remember the old garbage dump, and that's what I'm picturing it, where there's just, like, black bears. You're backing your truck up. Remember that in Rupert Pete?
Yeah.
They had that open garbage dump, and you drive down there, and there'd be, like, 30 black bears just rolling around in there. That's kind of what I'm, like, I picture, like, would you say, like, you get a lot of bears action, just like these bears come in, they sniff around, another one leaves. It's gonna be pretty cool to watch. Like, it's gonna be cool just to see those bears that close and like just how they interact with each other, because you don't really get to do that when you're spot and stalk hunting them.
It's funny too, because I think we talked about this last time, but each bear has its own personality, and that's I think why I'm so drawn to bear hunting, because it really is the most boring hunting you could do, because you sit in the stand for hours and hours and hours for wait for 5 seconds for this ghost to show up because they're so quiet. But it's the fact that the way they interact with each other, and then the way they interact with you, because the big bears generally will know you're there and very aware of you. But the, what I call the teenagers or the intermediate bears, they know you're there, and they interact with you a lot. Climb your ladder. The younger males will huff and stuff, but more what they do with each other. And it's, we talked about it last time too, is like, they will tell you when another bear comes before you'll even know another bear's coming. I don't know how they do it, because we're up high in a stand, or I don't know if we're going to hunt from the ground, as whatever you want to do. But usually when we're up in our stand, 15, 18 feet, we got a pretty good vantage over the whole area. But they're on the level, and they're by the barrel, and all of a sudden their head snaps up and they know where that bear's, another bear's coming. And it's pretty cool. Like, I think that's what I like about bear hunting the most is, you're so tired, you're so like bored, and how many times can you listen to the birds, and all of a sudden you hear a crack or you hear something and your head snaps, and sure enough, they come sneaking in. Last year when I shot it from the ground with my recurve, added a whole new kind of element for me, because I'm like, one thing you'll notice with me is I should be, but I'm totally not scared of bears at all. And so when I decided to shoot one with the recurve last year, I decided that I didn't want to do it from a tree stand. I wanted to do it from the ground. So then the first bear that I tried to get, I climbed out of the stand while it was at the barrel and tried to be super sneaky and hide. But then him and I had a face off at 5 yards and he ran. So then the next time I told my nephew, I'm like, the next time we see a big bear coming in advance, I'll climb out of the stand and I'll hide behind the tree, and then you stand up there and video it. And that's what we did. That's how I ended up getting them. But so it was pretty cool, like to basically recurve it right from behind a tree. And so that was fun. But
yeah, no, it's going to be cool. It's like, I picture it being like whitetail hunting too. Like when you're sitting there and you're so bored and like nothing's going on, then all of a sudden one comes in and it's coming in so slow, and it's like, oh, what is it? What is it? Is it good? Oh, so waiting to see the antlers. So
I've only been on a few good whitetail hunts where you see a big buck coming and you're in the blind or whatever. Mm-hmm. But what you described is exactly what it's like. Like you literally go from being so bored, and then once you see the big bear coming, it's like the biggest anticipation of your life. And 2 years ago when I got War Pig, it was like, I saw him coming. And I instantly knew that was him, just how big he was coming. And it went from, almost falling asleep. Like that 19 and a half inch bear that I got the rug done, I actually fell asleep and I was sleeping, and something caught, like, it wasn't a noise. Just, I woke up and looked up and there's a big bear walking in. I was like, how did I not see that bear coming in? And, but
yeah, no, it's going to be fun. That's exactly like, just that anticipation. That's where you start getting like you start getting amped up. You start like, oh, this is big. And then it's like, it's funny because like you seem to get more amped up than you would if you're sitting there having a calling match with an elk, or you're doing a spot and stalk on a mule deer, and you already know what it is you're going after, and you move into it there. It's like, you're just sitting waiting in anticipation. Like you don't know what it is yet. You're like, oh, what is it? What is it? What is it? And then, sometimes it's just it's a doe or it's a smaller buck, but
typically with bears, the way it works is you go in there, you fill the bait up, you go, you either you feed, you fill it before you go and hunt, or you fill it in like whatever. But typically what it works with the bear is the smaller bears come in right away, and then they kind of get bigger as the night goes. That's typically right. How it works. Now, you may get a big bear coming in right away. Like a couple years ago, I kept texting a friend from the stand. I'm like, get your ass up here. This bear's been here for 4 days in a row at the exact same time every day, and he's easily a 19, 20-inch bear. And he's like, I can't get away. But that was an early in the day bear, like so 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the evening. But typically the big guns don't show up till the end of the night.
Yeah. What time is it get dark? Usually it's like around 9, 10.
Oh man, it's yeah, we're hunting towards into May. It's I shot war pig at like 9:15 PM and right. that's Manitoba time. So that would be, I think that would be 8:15 my time. So it gets late. Like you can basically see in June till 10 o'clock or more.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. No, it's going to be a blast, man. I'm super pumped to go. So we're going to be going in and baiting these things off every time we go into.
Yeah. Like
going to the blind or in the stand.
Yeah. So like we will, I'm running three baits, but we're going to be only hunting the two. And, the way it'll work is we'll pick which one. Like I'll have I have like usually five cameras at each site, so mm-hmm. I'll have every angle of every bear that's coming in there, and whatever is the one that's has the biggest bear and has the most consistency, we'll bait it when we go in, and the other one we'll just bait like in the middle of the day while because we're not in there all the day. We're gonna hunt. We'll hunt first thing in the morning, like 3 o'clock in the morning. We'll go in the dark, and then we'll stay till like 7, 8 o'clock in the morning. And then we'll come out and make breakfast, have a nap, and then we'll go back in, or we'll go and bait, and then we'll make a decision where we're going to go, and usually back in the standby no later than 5.
Right.
That sounds like my kind of hunt. Oh, man.
Good day now.
You know what?
I need to redo my holidays. I love it now.
It's like hunting elk out of a camp. You know, you go hunt in the morning at first light. You hunt till about 10 o'clock. You go back, sleep the afternoon, then go out for the last 4 hours.
I'm going to go tell my wife this right now. Be like, it's made for me.
It's interesting. Like you said, you run five cameras to get every angle. Pete and I were talking about that. Sometime, I don't know when we were talking about.
No, that was like, on this lot when we were down. Yeah.
Yeah. We were talking about whitetails and how this year I was going to set up for whitetails is multiple cameras, because there always seems to be tracks and you can see in the snow and those tracks aren't leading up to your bait pile. And so just to get, you know, it might be that one buck, like the buck I shot this year, I never had him on camera at all. Now, it doesn't mean that he wasn't going into that area and just sniffing around, because I happened to see, like I shot him and he was going towards the bait, but that doesn't, there's also a lot of tracks going right past the bait. Like they never actually went into underneath the tree. I put them underneath the tree to keep the snow off them. And it just made me wonder, we were talking about like, yeah, next year I'm going to set up more cameras, because that buck that I shot, he very well could have been just walking past it every day,
left of it or to the right of it, and you just going just the camera screen.
Some yeah, he could have been smelling me, or just didn't like the smell of, because there was some coyotes and stuff that go into the bait as well.
So I'm gonna show you a picture of a big bear. We end up getting, this was our target bear last year, but it goes to what you're just saying. So this camera we have on the trail, it's 10 yards from the bait, but it's on a trail. It's not at the bait. And this bear was just up and down this trail. And we never had him on the camera at the bait until shortly before we got him. But he was on this trail camera probably a dozen times. But this is the bear that we end up getting.
Holy wow. Shit.
That's and a big bear.
That it just goes to show what you're saying. If I didn't have that camera down the trail a little ways, we would have never got that picture. And I remember going through when I pulled the cards, like when I went up there to refresh the baits, I generally don't look at the cards until I come home. And when I pulled that, I was like, oh, I text my nephew, giant alert, giant alert. And but he wasn't on any of the cards at the bait. So I don't know why he wasn't going to the bait, but it's exactly what you're saying, Kevin. It's like sometimes they're just transient.
Yeah. Yeah. And that made me wonder when, like, just you could see all the deer tracks in the snow, and then you're following like a specific buck that's walking through you when you're crossing, going into your blind or going to check your trail camera. You could see good tracks, and you follow those tracks and they don't go into the bait, like we're underneath the tree where the rest of them are really, you know, the doe. You see lots of does in there, lots. You see some smaller bucks, and that's all I was seeing. And then I was in the I was in that blind for not very long, a couple hours, and that big buck walked out, and I've never seen him before, but he was never on that trail camera. And then made me think, you know, maybe he is just he was walking by all the time. Maybe he was around there and just walking by, and I never knew it. It's just now I'm in the blind and I can see him. You know, and I shot him on while he was walking in a path. So, yeah.
I got to show you. I got to show you guys just once I find it, the coolest picture ever for War Pig. So I self filmed him. So I did get him on camera shooting him. But one of the coolest pictures I ever got of him, if I can find it, was the trail camera, like the same camera that I just showed you, that big bear, took a picture of War Pig 2 minutes before I arrowed him.
Oh, that's cool.
he was coming in, and like he'd come and gone the whole night, but he knew I was there, so he didn't want to commit. But just before dark, he was walking with a different purpose when he was coming down that trail. I knew that he must be thinking about coming in this time, because before he was always being hesitant. And so he came in right here. No, that's not it. The camera took a picture, because I didn't know it took a picture, obviously, until I went and pulled the cameras or the cards the next day. And the camera took a picture of him 2 minutes before I shot him, because that was the last, like, where the camera took him was like 10 yards from where I arrowed him. So what would that take him? 2 minutes, you know, the way a bear goes. But right here. Here it is. So this is the last picture of him known alive right there.
There's big.
So I mean, everybody's got that special kind of story with an animal that they've harvested. But for me, that just added to it. When I pulled the camera or the cards the next day and I saw that, I was like, wow, not only did I get to harvest them, but the trail camera kind of picked on it too. So,
yeah. Is there any, have you ever gone, like, has there ever been a target bear that you haven't killed that you've been really like going for and just you've never seen them? Or have you always been successful?
No, we had one bear. Yes, I should. We had one bear. We called him Divot Head. He was, he had a big divot. Like, you know, every bear has that big bear has a crease. Well, he had the crease, but he also had this big divot looking thing in his head. And that's the only, and we estimated him over 500 pounds and we never did get him.
Wow.
So yes, that's the only sort of quasi target bear that we had that we never got, but we got War Pig. We got, Landon got his big, 450 pound bear. We got this guy. We just have to try to get Vico.
Yeah. Well, man, I'm hoping I'm there when he walks in so I can drill him.
Dude, I truly hope you get a 500 pound black one.
Hey, Muck, yeah. I'll call you after and I'll tell you what you got to do with Kevin's bow. It's what I do all the time when he leaves it by my camper.
Yeah.
Hey, buddy, your bow is sitting in my garage. I wouldn't be chirping right now about his bow. Not smart.
Do we have time to tell you a quick story from last year?
Oh, we got as much time as.
So I'm all about networking. Like, met this Cody Robbins. You guys know Cody, right?
Yeah.
So Cody had me down. I called in a big 6-point bull elk for him, or 7-point bull elk for them 2 years ago. And while we're down there, we met this farmer and that gave us permission to hunt on his land when we were hunting for elk. And he mentioned to me that he wanted to hunt bear. And I'm like, you want to hunt bear? And I mean, this guy has mule deer running all over his country. And so I said, well, maybe we can make a bit of a trade, like give me permission, because they changed the laws here. Like, it's more like the other provinces now, you have to have permission, whereas Saskatchewan was always kind of an anomaly. Unless it was posted, you could hunt on it. So they, but they recently changed it with the, they call the trespassing laws now. So later you, even if it's not posted, you have to get permission, but before you could hunt it if it wasn't posted. I know that's confusing, but that's the way ever since I've been a kid, if there was no sign on the land, you could hunt it. And so they changed that. So I'm like, well, maybe I could come down archery mule deer hunting if you want to come kill a bear. And he's like, yeah, absolutely. Not overly thinking he was serious, but I kept all winter. I kept messaging him, and he was a nice guy. And I kept saying, hey, do you want to, you know, start planning your bear hunt? Your so this is a like a hard luck story that ended well. So he's a big rancher. He shows up to my house. We pack up, we drive to my hunting camp. And I, the whole winter, I'm like, my baits are only like 10 yards long. I'd rather you not shoot him with a rifle or anything like that, because I want a little bit of sport with him, like pretty much bow only. And he's like, well, I don't bow hunt. I said, well, how about a crossbow? I've got a good buddy in Yorkton that has a crossbow we'll borrow. He said we could borrow it. So he's like, sure. So we stop at my buddy's on the way to bear camp, grab his crossbow, and we head into bear camp. And I'm like, we set baits that night and pulled the cards. And I'm like, we should maybe shoot this crossbow before we do it. And he's like, good idea. So the farmer that we stay at, he's got bales because he's got cattle and horses and stuff. So we set up target, and it just wasn't going well. That the thing was shooting just weird, and all of a sudden eventually boom, the string blows off. Oh, and I mean, no, I'm a bow hunter, I'm not a crossbow hunter, so I know nothing about this thing, except for I know that we were doing it correctly. We were not doing it incorrectly. I did know that. So the string blows off. So now he's like, oh no, what are we gonna do? And I said, well, I got my bow here. He's a little taller than me. I'm a short dude, but he's a little bit taller than me. But I'm pretty sure I could teach him to shoot 10 yards, you know, that in that day. So we shoot my bow when the draw length was a little bit short for him, but he could make it work. And he was shooting very well. 10 yards, he could hit the bullseye with a broadhead. So I'm like, I'm pretty sure that you could do this, Tyler, even though you're not a bow hunter, I could lead you through it. And so that night we pack up about 5 o'clock in the evening. We drive the quad in. And I drop him off at the stand, and I said, just climb up the stand, and I'm going to drive the quad out a couple hundred yards and then I'll bring the seat in. I said, maybe it's a good idea to practice drawing your bow from up top there. He's like, okay. So I turn around and I'm tootle away with the quad, and I walk back in, and I come back, and he's like, oh, Muck, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, what? He goes, I dry fired your bow.
I'm trying
not to be mad because it's kind of my fault, right? Like I pushed him to shoot bow and he didn't really want to shoot the bow, but here's the story. He's like, so what happened is, he goes, Muck, as soon as you left, like within 10 seconds of you leaving, two bears came in, and he goes, I didn't want to draw and accidentally shoot him. So he goes, I didn't put an arrow in. He goes, and the only reason I did that is because I didn't want to accidentally shoot a bear. And which makes complete sense, meaning that, you know what I mean? Like I see his good intentions. And he goes, I went to let down, and he goes, I hit the trigger and it went off. And I mean, it just mushroomed. It just mushroomed my cams. I'm like, oh God. So now what are we going to do? Well, the only thing we had left is the old Defender shotgun with 1 ounce slugs. And so I'm like,
holy shit.
If you want to shoot it with the shotgun, you're welcome to shoot it with a shotgun.
Man, I don't know if I'd trust them with anything after
all these weapons.
And
what else gets
better, fellas.
Oh so, no.
So we were in the stand for about a day and a half. And we'd seen probably two dozen bears, and there was one probably 250-pound colored bear that he really liked. And I really didn't want him to shoot our colored bears, but I'm like, you know what? You know, Mike wants us to take as many bears out of there as we can. So I say, if you want to take that bear on the last evening, you go ahead. And the last evening comes, and like we nicknamed this bear, what did we call him? What was his? We always nicknamed my bears. What did we nickname this bear? It doesn't matter. We nicknamed his bear as a kind of a catchy name. And I like, it was kind of quiet that night. There wasn't a lot of bears. So about 6:30, 7 o'clock at night, we see two bears coming up the quad trail. And I'm like, oh, it's him. It's him. And I'm like, okay, get ready. And I have one of those big double stands, and it's got the shooting kind of like the rest on it. And I'm like, just get set up. And when he gives you a good, you know, broadside shot, it's a freaking Defender shotgun with iron sights. Like it's made to protect me, not to shoot it. So I wasn't 100% sure where, but it's rifled slug. So the bear gives him probably 100 shooting opportunities in like 30 minutes. And I'm running camera. And I mean, I must have 30 minutes of like bullshit B roll expecting him to shoot, but he wasn't shooting. And I'm like, I'm kept like, we're 10 yards away with a 1 ounce slug. So finally the bear was kind of half sitting down or like broadside, but sitting down, and he shoots and the bear runs away. And I'm like, did you just miss? And he's like, no. Yeah, I think I shot right by its paw. And he goes, Muck, I jerked it really bad. And I'm like, oh, so I review the video, and sure enough, he hits the ground right by its paw, and it runs away. So now he's like totally dejected and like defeated. And I mean, I unloaded the gun. First of all, I walked down to the barrel just to make sure there wasn't any blood or anything like that. And there wasn't. So I climbed back in the stand and I checked I unloaded it and I checked the trigger press on it. And I mean, I'm telling you, it probably was 25 pounds or more trigger press. Yeah. Like it was really, really hard, stiff. It's like a Benelli Nova, you know, the short little Defenders. And
yeah.
And so I got, he goes, I was pressing it, it didn't work. So he goes, I just jerked it. And so I'm like, well, I mean, we still got 2 hours till darkness. Maybe he'll come back in. And a black comes in and two others. And I could tell that this was a young boar because the way he was acting. And I'm like I would normally not let him shoot a bear this small because he's probably 200, 225. He epically fails time after time. So I'm like, okay, so I kind of coached him how to shoot it, like just really be really smooth and don't jerk it and talk yourself through it. So the bear walks away from the tree, he turns around, and he's got his nose down, he's going to walk back to the barrel, and he makes a perfect shot. Like you could see that he makes a perfect shot, but the bear makes two things, leaps onto the tree with the barrel and goes up 50 feet in the air and then just let's go and free falls to the ground and stone dead. And I looked at him and I'm like, I've hunted bear my whole life waiting for something like that. And like it had just happened, and I got it all in video. It was pretty cool. But I mean,
that's funny.
And then, you know, he turned into a good friend. I went down there mule deer hunting with him this year with archery and stuff like that. So, but it was just like, if anything could go wrong, it did.
That's, yeah. Well, it's good it worked out for him, but yeah. No, man, like, yeah, I'm not super picky. Like, I'm pretty pumped to go witness it all. I mean, obviously, even if we don't get one, that's cool too, but it's going to be a lot of fun to come out there. But yeah, big black. We actually get more color phase here than black bears, which is like than the traditional black bears. So,
well, I'm hoping that you could stay, you know, like 3-4 days at least, yeah, so that we can that we can look over, you know, 15, 20, 30 bears and really do a good field judge. That's a lot of the problem with bear hunters is they want to shoot the first thing that walks in.
Yeah.
And because everything looks big when you have nothing to compare it to.
Yeah.
And yeah. So that's why in Saskatchewan here, like it's against the law to shoot a sow. Nobody really shoots sows with cubs, but even sows that are like, milking sows or whatever they're called, you know, like it's because the sows will come in generally first or early in the night. And then what do hunters do? They think it's big and they shoot it. And then they find out like later, like 2 years ago, a guy did that. He shot a sow, and somewhere there was cubs out there. So
yeah,
just because she had milk bags still.
Yeah. What about hunting in Alberta, Derek? We talked before, and like Pete and I were under the impression that all Alberta was bait hunting, and
no,
corrected us and said northern, good, southern, no.
Yeah, southern is all like spot and stock. Northern, it's there's baiting. It's pretty like outfitters go really hard in the spring. And the population is insane up there. Like big pumpkin heads, hey.
Yeah. Do you get out much for spring bear?
I was earlier on, like when I was younger, but it just wasn't as good. The snow was really the limiting factor, right? Like the areas I hunt, it's just snowed in there so bad. Like you'll see bears, but you can't get around, eh? Like you'd be just hiking in. And
when does it open there?
Pretty soon here. Yeah, pretty soon. Normally I don't hunt the opener because it snowed like in 402 and like some of the 400 zones and like 305, 304, like it's usually snowed in pretty bad. So, you know, it's dependent on the year. Like I went 1 year up in like kind of out by the Rockies there, and holy shit, like it's waist high snow still. And it's you just can't get around.
Yeah, you're getting into that higher elevation for sure. What about down low? I guess it's one of those things you got to go get permission on. Is there a lot of bears down low?
Yeah, so where I'm going to be going is where I hunt elk in that area that I showed you. The core, that's when I talk about zones of pressure for elk. Well, there's zones of pressure for bears. Like the bear population in the core of the zone is insane. So, you know, like it pushes the elk actually, like there's so many bears, like it tends to pressure elk to the outer edges of it. And I don't think there was one week last season, not this one, the 2022 that 2022 and 2021, 2021, I called in like, frick, I was calling in more bears than I was elk. It was just every day bear, 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 bear.
Black bears too. I remember we were talking about calling grizzlies, but
yeah, black bears. Lots of black bears. I had one grizzly run by me at 40 yards at last light too. But
do you ever do any calling when you're like for spring bear?
Yeah, I do. But it's the thing I've noticed is like I'll never get the big boars. Hey, like it'll be smaller bears that'll come in, and then it's hard to get rid of them. Hey, like you kind of want them out of there, and then you're like, there's been a couple color, like one really good color phase I tried killing that was in an area, but he got wised up quick because it's all spot stock. There's no bait. There's no motivator, right?
Yeah.
So then if you're calling in, they might come in, but you got to be steady. And as soon as it starts greening up, that goes away quick. Gets harder and harder to see them.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
it's just the ticks too. Like the ticks are insane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? Like,
yeah, ticks. They're brutal. I feel like that's, man, everybody.
It's like everywhere now.
Yeah, everywhere. Like
everywhere.
Guys in the States were saying this year, like for turkey already, some of them were like, "Fuck, the ticks are too bad. I couldn't even go out."
Really?
And if you're getting to the point where if you're a diehard turkey hunter and the ticks are too bad, you can't even go turkey hunting. It's like, holy fuck.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's 2017. Like, we were bear hunting. We were hitting it hard. And, like, big country rifle, we weren't going for archery. Like, so we were, like, serious to kill some bears and really, really serious. And the ticks were so bad, we ended up having to stop. Every day, it's, like, nonstop ticks. Like, 20, 30 ticks per person kind of deal. It's just insane.
I'm kind of lucky then where I am. I know we got them, but rarely do I end up with them on me. For whatever reason, yep. The deer are loaded with them, the sheep are loaded with them, but
yeah,
hardly we ever get.
We go in the spring, we get freaking hammered with them.
Yeah,
we're Kevin, when you come next month, the ticks are horrible.
Yeah,
like horrible. I'm gonna show you a picture of maybe it made your way there because I know somebody showed me this picture of this bear with the ticks in its face, and
oh,
I'm
yeah.
like,
yeah, you sent us that one, yeah, gross. Send it again though.
Oh yeah, you.
Yeah, let's see it again though. But yeah, it's gnarly, man. Well, like we were talking, were we talking about it on the show? I can't remember if we were talking about it on a show or if you and I were talking about it. We were talking about the moose and stuff getting eaten by ticks.
Oh yeah, we were talking about it on the weekend too.
Derek, I took this from my tree stand last year. Look at the ticks on that eyes.
Oh my god!
So that's how bad the ticks are down here.
Yeah. That's freaking poor brutal. Animal. No kidding, poor bear. Jeez,
I killed a bear one year and it had so many ticks on it. I take my knife and just scrape them, and it was just like it was just absolutely disgusting. They were just like the size of my thumb too.
My first bear in Manitoba was that way. It was so bad. There wasn't one square inch that wasn't crawling. But, you know, I got a trick for skinning bears now. I take crawling insect spray. And before we ever do any field dressing or anything, I spray that every inch of that bear with that stuff. And they literally just fall off. Yeah. So when you skin it and stuff like that, you don't have any ticks on you. Cause I learned that after that first bear, because I even took it to the taxidermist and he was even disgusted from it.
Yeah. It's funny. Like, one of the taxidermists that lives here, a friend of mine, his son ended up getting bit and contracting Lyme disease from a tick that came in off a bear hide. Poor little bugger. Yeah. Right on his arm too. Like right there got bit. It's funny he didn't notice it dug into his arm unless it happened while he was sleeping.
Lyme disease is nasty too, because it's like a lifetime of problems after you get that.
Well, they caught it early enough, so that's the key with Lyme disease. If you catch it early enough, it's a lot better than it is if you don't know about it. And the thing is, a lot of people don't necessarily know about it, so don't even know they have it. So nasty.
The tests aren't that accurate either. From my understanding, you can test it 50 times and 49 times it'll come back negative, and the 50th time it'll come back positive. Whatever the reason is. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and like we were talking with Dan about that tick in the south, the Lone Star tick coming north, making its way north now. So that'd be a shitty one to get. All of a sudden being allergic to get bit by a bug and you're allergic to red meat.
No, thank you.
I don't know. What do you do then?
There's nothing you can do.
Just keep eating it anyway.
Are you gonna bring your bear meat home?
Oh yeah, fuck yeah, yeah. I'm bringing big coolers.
I love it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I actually mucked this year with the bear that I got. It was the first one that I'd shot and actually went out for. I turned my daughter, youngest daughter, and my sister-in-law. Who were totally my youngest daughter was on the fence, but she was willing to try it. My sister-in-law didn't even really want me going out, and sure as shit, they were just like two fisting it into their mouth by the time. And that was with the roast that we had smoked and everything, or the hams, the pepperoni, unreal. The bratwurst, second to none, like just unreal top to bottom.
I feel like you got to go bow only for bear this spring, Pete.
I'm going to try to.
Well, it's, you can get two. So
no,
you can
I'm not
get
even one. I'm not even going to try. I'm going to only go bow. And I can see maybe somebody having a rifle with me just in case something goes sideways, because I do have a lot of grizzlies around. So I should probably have a little bit of backup, but myself. I'm going to be going hard with the bow.
Well, with the way you shoot, I don't know. You're a rifle. You're probably more definitely better.
Yeah.
The sound of the rifle might scare him away.
That's about all that's going to happen, right?
Derek, where are you hunting at? Like, you're talking about mountains.
Alberta, southern Alberta. Yeah, we got mountains.
Like, you're talking Pincher Creek area type stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, that's literally an hour from where I live. Yeah.
I used to guide with a guy that lived from Pincher Creek. He worked at the gang ranch. Is it called the gang ranch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
I don't know. His name is Sean Anderson, and he's from Pincher Creek, but I used to guide with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. He used to work at the gang. I'm sure it's a gang or dude ranch or guide ranch or something.
Well, there is a, like the gang ranch in Lillooet here, like north of Lillooet. There was a gang ranch.
And then he's from Pincher Creek, but he used to come up to Fort St. John where I used to guide.
Nice.
So yeah, like no wonder you guys would get into snow because you could have plus 30 weather one day and then snow the next.
Yeah, like we got 15 degrees right now, like today, and we're going back into winter wonderland over the weekend again. It's just nonstop. We get the Chinook, so it's like freaking insane. Like it'll temperature swing like 20 degrees in a couple hours. But in that high alpine area, you don't really know what you're getting, right? It's like you go in there, you're like, oh, we're good to hunt, and we go up there and you get to your main hunting area and you can't even drive. You have to stop. And now with all the rules, you can't even pull over on the side or cut trail. You have to stay on the road system now. Otherwise you get fined. So, I mean, your only option is to hunt through and go up and over. But yeah, that is how you have to hunt in Southern Alberta. It's depending on how early you can get in there and just trying your best to follow that chartreuse grass line and just hunt that line. You can do some predator calling, but as soon as that grass greens, it's not really effective anymore.
Yeah.
Here in Saskatchewan, we call that the dandelion lull. As soon as the dandelions come out, the bears go away.
Yeah, that's usually what we try to do is we try to hit that level of dandelions. Like we'll all be talking to each other and, you know, like, you know, such and such went up to this lake and be like, oh yeah, they just popped, or they just finished off. They're on their first cycle where they just seeded. So it's like, all right, I got to get up higher or whatever to get to the fresh stuff. But yeah, that's all we do is hunt the dandelion elevations there at, you know, for me anyway.
Yeah. Right on. So I guess we'll wrap her up. How was your week course, Pete?
Oh man, it's still ongoing. I got to go back upstairs and finish off my homework here. I got a few more questions to do. It's insane. And three hour exam on Friday. So it's just the math, and the other stuff isn't that big of a deal. It's just my water distribution course. So,
oh yeah.
Most of the other stuff kind of ties into a bit of, you know, I know a little bit about a lot of it. But man, some of the math stuff, I'm glad it's not a huge portion of the course. So
Pete, we're gonna have to get out and shoot some 3D now that we kind of do the odd same tournament.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I saw that you just finished shooting outside or something like that there, and
yeah, finally got our 3D course set up yesterday.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, no, I'm definitely, as soon as I get my bow back, I probably won't have time to
if
I get my bow back. There's an archery shoot in Cranbrook, like right when I get it back. So it depends how sighted in it is.
It's going to be way off, Pete.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be way off. Why won't this string pull right back? Like it's,
you know, those little diamond kids bows. I should just send that back.
Yeah.
It's going to be embarrassing when I beat you at the bighorn with that one too. But yeah, I, like we were chatting there, I am next year planning on going to the nationals up in Lac La Biche there.
Oh yeah. I'll be doing Lac La Biche the 3D this year, like the ASA tour, the Alberta ASA tour. We have our own big ASA shoot here in 2 weeks indoor in Regina. It's been sold out for almost 2 months now.
That's good. Yeah, I just noticed today there was some posting for registration for our provincial outdoor 3D too. I think it's up in Quesnel this year. So I got to see what I can do there too. I might head up to that. I want to try to hit as many as I can this year, just to, you know, get going. And then if I can figure out that lighting thing inside, like what you're trying to help me out with the peep. And I bought one, Kevin's got one that he's going to install to it similar. But just to try to experiment with some stuff and just see if I can figure that indoor lighting. Cause I would like to go to Lethbridge and stuff. They got the Iron Man down there. Yep. I think it's in January or whatever, or February, whatever.
It's January.
Okay.
Is there bow classifications for indoor too?
You bet.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay.
So yeah, I'd like to hit a few of those, but I'm definitely not driving 5 hours to be like, yep, still can't see out my bow.
Yeah.
Are you guys
practice inside, like in your garage or anything, to practice with different lighting?
Well, I'm thinking if I got the downstairs now, so I was having similar issues, so I should be able to get some of it figured out. And then anytime there is an indoor shoot, as long as I have a setup where I can change peeps and the colors and all that kind of stuff, I can play around with it and see. I'll be able to figure it out eventually. There's got to be something simple that it is. Yeah. Just, I didn't have the right setup at the right time. That's all.
Like I was explaining to you with the shape of the inside of the peep matters and like black. Yeah. Because I know you shot the red one, my bow in the garage, and the red, you didn't get any glare off it.
No, and it was good.
And that's like a bright garage with that shitty lighting in there.
What type of peep are you running that you get the glare?
Well, it wasn't so much glare. I just had a really hard time seeing the outline of my housing of my sight. So to be able to know, be like, all right, I got circle on circle, I'm centered. I could see my pin fine. I could see the target pretty good as far as my old eyes can see the target. It was literally, I just couldn't tell whether I was perfectly centered or not when I was at my anchor point. You know, so, I'd just be a little off all the time.
Like, so like this peep that I'm going to send you, do you know what size of aperture you need?
Well, I think the one that we took off there, Kevin, that was a 3/16, right? And then,
well, you had a 1/4 inch and a 3/16.
The 1/4 inch was on my old spare string. That wasn't the string that I shot with.
So the 1/4 inch would be like a hunting setup. Like it definitely wouldn't be for 3D. It'd be just way too big.
Yeah. So I had the 3/16.
Pete, we're talking about. He just runs.
I need.
You never know what he's gonna run.
I just fucking whatever. Just give me a pointy maybe stick. You need, I'm gonna send maybe, it down range.
Hey, maybe you do need that bigger one for all the light. I don't know. Or maybe you need a purifier.
Well, that's kind of what I was getting at. Like for hunting, yes, I use a reducer or a smaller aperture for hunting even because what I find is my peep is way bigger than my hunting scope. And, you know, it's very, very, you have to be very, very precise to get it perfectly in the center. So you want to match your housing to your peep. And in 3D, at least, they make the peeps that you can adjust the apertures. That's why I'm saying, like, if I knew exactly what aperture you need, like one of these peeps that I'm sending you, I can put a 3/32 aperture in there for you. Gotcha.
Going to be able to, because he bought a TrueGlow and he's going to be able to adjust it. So,
okay.
And he can go home and he can fiddle with them and then he can tell you the exact one that he likes that matches his housing. Cause I mean, that all depends too on like, I can't remember like the distance, your sight, your scope is off your riser. And also depends on too, on your draw length, because like Derek could run his sight right tight to his riser. And it might be the same, like mine is on the very, I run a dovetail and it's like, it's as far as the dovetail will allow it away. But the distance from my pin to my peep sight might be the same as his, because he's got like a 44-inch draw length.
Yeah,
not quite.
For my housing size, I've got a Spot Hog triple stack, so I've got the multiple rings that I can do. When I was shooting at Kevin's place, I had actually, on my way there, I had swapped it to the bigger ring that's got basically three sizes, because you got your outside and then you got there's a little line that separates the...
But that's only going to do you good, Pete, depending, because you're not going to be able to see, it's all going to be cut off from your peep sight.
Yeah. And anyway, but what I was getting at is when I do the outdoor, like any of my outdoor shoots before that I've done, whether it was nationals, bighorn, wherever, it was always the smallest one is what I had on that housing. It was just a skinny green one that I screwed on. And that's the one I've been running the whole time that I've been shooting that bow. And I never have a problem. The peep seems to fit that fine outside. The first time I wasn't able to kind of just see what was going on was that first time I shot inside. I had no idea what was going on. I remember us all talking about it.
Yeah, I have the same thing though, Pete. Like anytime I'm like tuning a bow, I have to be really careful because I can't see like through my outdoor hunting setup. I always have a very limited amount of light coming through my peep. Like I find a hard time shadowing around my sight on my front sight. The only thing I've done in the past was I pushed my sight out a little further, or I've like I haven't changed my peep too much because I didn't want to mess with it too much because it does work for hunting.
Yeah,
but I'm running the same thing.
Do you try messing around with opening, like you shoot with your eye closed, right, Pete?
Yes, and I've been trying to practice opening it up
a little, just to let a little bit of light in your left eye when you're shooting. Okay.
Yeah, I have been trying to practice over time to try to get my, like, I know we talked about it last year a lot, shooting with both eyes open. And when I am outside, I do try to do that. I just haven't got there yet. Like, I end up shutting it, but I am trying. But yeah, you know what?
That's a good thing. Do you shut it because you can't, what gets out of focus when you open your left eye?
fucking everything. I'm old. I don't know.
It's or, just, like, are you left eye dominant?
I just can't see down my peep as well. Yeah, I think I'm right eye dominant. I think it's just
so your left. Yeah. Well, it takes some practice to do it, but you get a lot more a lot more light in.
Yeah, and it's not that I can't see down with my right eye when I have them both open. It's just not as clear. Like it's not like it goes to my left eye and it gets crisp.
Oh, like the target gets crisp or
everything. Like looking through my peep, everything's crystal clear. But when I have my left eye open, things just
it's good. You see that with any type of scope, your brain must be starting to mix match it.
Yeah, because your left eye is trying to take over, so you're not totally right eye dominant. That's what that is.
When Pete, when you were trying to explain it to me there a couple weeks ago, you had me all kinds of fucked up because I wasn't sure really of what you were saying when you were trying to explain it to me. One thing that you can consider that could be a problem, what's your draw length?
28 and a half.
Because and your axle to axle, your bow?
33.
Because like one thing for me, I'm not a tall guy, so I need a steep like a 52 degree peep. If you're, you know, a tall dude or something like that, you might need your degree might be 37, 45. And that actually will make a difference on the clarity of your looking through your peep. And especially indoors.
Can't. Yeah. You might have peep camp.
Oh, that's right.
What Wyatt, that's what Wyatt has right now. We can't get him because Wyatt's shooting a 30 shooting that laser. And I think it's 37 inch axle to axle.
Yep. So he needs a 52 like me, probably.
Well, he's only got a 22 inch draw length.
Okay. I'm a 27 and a half.
Yeah, but he's only 12, right? So
right.
He's not very tall. But we've been playing. We can't get him. You can't get enough. Angle's too. Got to get really. It's almost.
So straight. Then you don't have peep alignment. So you're just losing a bunch of light.
Well, that's right. And that's what I think may be happening to you, Pete. Outdoors, it's not a big deal.
Because I can put it in the draw board and look at it. I mean, I noticed too. So when I did your bow, your rest must have moved, eh? Because it's not level. It's not level against your bow. Yeah. Should be perfectly perpendicular to
you. Yeah, we were talking about that. We never got a chance to do
that's
that
the trouble with only one when you only have a when you can only mount like one bolt in one through one burger hole rather than two. Some risers have two, some bows allow you to have two. Then you don't ever have to worry about it moving. But yours was off.
Well, it was a good thing to learn when you're showing me that stuff. And hopefully in the next year I'll be getting my own bull press that I'll have set up downstairs and I can keep checking that stuff as we're, you know, every couple months or whatever. And
I'm interested too to see what's going on with your limbs, where you have your limbs are all
to kind of
I put it in the draw board and I looked at it. Like I even put the laser on it. You don't have any, like you got a little bit of cam lean on your top cam, but not a lot. That's not what's calling your limbs to do well. Like they're doing like,
yeah, they just look like they were in a bit and not perfectly flat.
The one is doing a weird thing on the inside.
What type of bow is it?
It's a sheet Hoyt.
A Hoyt Ventum Pro 33.
Hoyts are for women and for kids, is what I always say.
Oh, yeah. That's got
I'm insulted. I shoot a Hoyt too.
That
sounds odd. Your cam's doing that.
Well, it's his limbs. His limbs are
it's my limbs.
Yeah. Oh, maybe the deflection. Maybe the is it split limbs?
No.
Split limbs. I'm not overly knowledgeable like that, but I do know if you have them out of the wrong, like if you have the where the top ones were messed up and supposed to be on the bottom, or you know what I mean. You can get all kinds of weird deflection that way, but.
Yeah, no, it's I don't know what it is. It could be just I'm gonna check his cables and stuff too.
Just like, get a Bowtech.
We're getting him new strings made up, and then I'm gonna test. I didn't test like his. Did we look at your timing? I can't remember.
I think you looked at my. I think you were. I was doing something else in the house there.
I think your timing was good. I think we just need to look at that. It could be, you know, the problem with. When you're running those kind of strings, and if you're not like you didn't get the strings and the cables made at the same time. So like if you're running a 452X and like a BCY 99, you know, you maybe there's just inconsistency in your string.
The one's fighting the other.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just weird it would be like that. So anyway, we're getting all, he's going to make you new cables and string with 452, and then I'll put them in, and then I'll set your bow up for you.
No, it'll be awesome. And then we'll see how it goes.
It should be. Unless you did something and you bent like your axle or something.
That's what I was going to say. It seems like an axle, but
I mean, yeah. I'll pull it out anyway. I could pull your axles out anyway and just check.
You wouldn't even have to pull a bow. All you got to do is press it, spin the thing off and rotate them. You'll know right away if it's if there's any kind of restriction there, you're probably got a bent axle.
Yeah. When I pull the strings off, I'll spin the cam and just see what happens. Maybe it is.
Yeah. It'll be good to know.
Yeah. Interesting. All right, guys. Awesome, Muck. We'll keep chatting. You guys got anything to add?
Well, thanks again for coming on. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, nice meeting you, Muck.
Yeah, nice meeting you, Derek. Good luck in the spring.
So what we're gonna do is we're gonna play this episode, and then we're gonna play last year's episode with Muck as well. Rather than ask all the same questions, I figured we'd switch it up. So we'll play this one and we'll play the next one in two different episodes, but we'll play them kind of back to back. So when you're done listening to this one, listen to that one again, because it's full of great tips and stuff. And you get to hear the great story of War Pig again.
Yeah. I hadn't
shot your other bow yet.
My friends are getting sick of War Pig, but I'm not. He actually should be done at the taxidermist here right away.
Well, that'll be awesome.
Cool. All right, guys. We'll chat with you later.
You betcha.
Good night, fellas.